Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Based on real events, I Am Gitmo follows the reaction of the United States to the 9/11 attack and the human costs that came from the implementation of the War on Terror. The film focuses on Gamal Zadegh, a Muslim schoolteacher, as he is taken from his home and delivered to Bagram Air Force Base, a CIA black site, where he is questioned on the whereabouts of 9/11 mastermind Osama bin Laden. He is disoriented, not quite sure exactly how he got there. It's a very powerful film called I Am Gitmo, and we're joined today by the director and writer, Philippe Diaz. Philippe, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's very nice to be here.
For those of us who lived through 9/11, which happened now 23 years ago, which is hard to believe, but the trauma of it was real and significant. What was it about the U.S. government reaction? What was it about the establishment of the prison at Guantanamo Bay? Why did you decide that you wanted to move forward with this particular project called I Am Gitmo?
Well, it's a little bit long story, but I'll make it short for you, which is that, you know, I spend my life mainly producing, but also writing and directing movies which have all a social political angle, simply because I believe that movie can make a difference in the world. And I created my own company here in Los Angeles like 33 years ago, which is Cinema Libre Studio. And the company has been specialized in social political film. We distributed probably 250 or something like that, you know, produce a lot as well. So that was always my inclination, probably because when I was young, I studied political philosophy, and that probably woke me up on many, many things. And my interest in Guantanamo started when we started to hear, it was probably around 2004, 2003 maybe, we started to hear about these people who were brought to Guantanamo where they were interrogated and eventually tortured. And of course, at the beginning, everybody said, oh, that's conspiracy theory. You know, the U.S. doesn't torture anybody. And, you know, I was a little bit, still a little bit surprised. And after that, the Mohamedou Houlslahi published his book called Guantanamo Diary. And that was for me the biggest shock, because when I read the book, you know, Mohamedou was able to write a diary, as the book is called, you know, on a daily basis of what happened to him, who questioned him, who tortured him, the way they tortured him. And he gave the name, or at least the name he knew, you know, from being there, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I can tell you, you read that, you can't sleep after for several days, because it is insane. It's absolute insanity. So I didn't only took Mohamedou's word for it. I looked at all the trials. So it was the time where there were many trials because the lawyers, you know, were able to force the government to review the statute of these people, because the Bush administration had a great idea, which is they are not fighters in a war, so therefore they are not protected by anything. They created this new concept of enemy combatant. And as enemy combatant, according to the Bush administration, you have no right of any kind. And to make sure that they would have zero right, they created this prison on Guantanamo Bay in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, which is very simple. So it's a military American base. So, of course, Cuban law cannot, you know, affect a U.S. military base. And it's in Cuba, so American law cannot manage something which is in Cuba. So, therefore, there is no law which applies to the prison. And so, of course, for a long time, so for probably, I would say, 4 years, 3 to 4 years, no lawyers were able to get there, no human rights organization, no nothing. These people were held incognito. Nobody knew where they were, et cetera, et cetera. When it started to come out, lawyers started to force the government to accept that that was not legally acceptable, and therefore they had the right of representation, blah, blah, blah. Lawyers started to go there. And they started to force the government to put these people on trial, because Either they have evidence of their culpability, and that's fine, or they don't, and therefore they have to be free. And as you know, because you saw the movie, you know, 85% of the people brought there, and we're talking about, so let's say roughly 750 people, you know, were never charged with anything. And so, of course, that's the biggest shock of all. And that's when I started, long story, but I read all the trial, all the transcript of the trial, which were made public, right? Because we started at the time, of course, to have more books published on the issue by former detainee, but also by translators, by lawyers, and even by some soldiers who could not stand what was going on there, even if they were part of it. Some accepted it like it was their job and who cares, and some totally refused it. So I started to read through all that. And, you know, the more you study that, the more it's insane. Because I'll tell you, and I'll finish on that, the issue is that after 9/11, the Bush administration decided that they had to find a terrorist. And so what happened is Donald Rumsfeld had this brilliant idea to say, well, we'll pay people to bring us terrorists. So he printed millions of leaflets that were thrown all over Afghanistan saying, bring me a terrorist, we'll give you a lot of money. And it was a lot of money. At the time, it was anywhere from $2,000 to $20,000, which is in Afghanistan at the time a gigantic amount of money. It's years of income for anybody. So, of course, tons of people started to turn anybody, the neighbor, the guy they wanted their land, or the taxi driver, or the whatever. And so these people were interrogated. You know, the first question was, where is Bin Laden? And most of the people said, who? What? They never even heard about Bin Laden, right? So, oh, you don't want to talk? Torture. And so these people were sent immediately to the CIA black site where they were tortured because, you know, who cares? We need information. And as the guy who plays the CIA officer in the movie says clearly, we don't care. As long as they sign something, we're fine. We're done with our job. And of course, when you are tortured, there is a moment you give up and you sign whatever they want you to sign. You know, so it created this gigantic, and you know, it was like very serious torture. People lost their limbs under torture. People died under torture. Even the CIA confessed. They say, yeah, we lost a few, you know, during interrogation. Again, it was roughly 800 people were sent to Guantanamo to be tortured for years. Some were there for 15 or 20 years. The one who wrote Guantanamo Diary, Mohamed Ould-Slaïs, said was in Guantanamo for 13 years, being tortured and interrogated. And when you look at that, you say, wait a minute, that the American government is doing that? Yes, it is. And that's the worst part, is that for me, that's what started everything for me, is that it was not, you know, a few bad apples, like, yes, the few bad soldiers who tortured or roughed up a guy a little bit too much. No, it was a systemic thing put in place by the government. It was all the inmates there will have to go through all of these tortures. And so what I did in the movie, of course, it's a fictional character because I didn't want to involve anybody. The only one who is not fictional is the head of the prison, which is General Geoffrey Miller. That's a true character, and he's still alive and he's retired now, you know. But, you know, it was a systemic things where, so if you're, I didn't add anything, I didn't pile up on this fictional character what many people went through. No, they all had to go through the same level of torture until they sign something. And for example, Mohamed Ould-Slaïs in his book explained, at the end of the day, I signed because it was unbearable. I could not take it anymore. I made up stories that I knew everything and et cetera, and I signed. Of course, later on after he denied, he says, look, I signed under torture because I could not take it anymore. But as the interrogator says in the movie, he says, what kind of intelligence does that provide? Nothing. Of course, because most of the terrorists who have information, they will not reveal it no matter what. And the worst part is that, of course, the one who don't have, you know, any information will make it up just to stop the torture, the regular torture on a daily basis, you know. And that's why I thought, I even tried to buy the rights to adapt the book of Mohamedou, but it had been sold already and it will become the film The Mauritanian, you know, which was a major disappointment for me because I was able to get a screenplay that they were ready to put in production. And I was very, very disappointed because it's not the story of Mohamed Dou. It's the story of Nancy Olander, which is this wonderful woman and wonderful lawyer who took him out of Guantanamo after 13 years. But we don't need another movie with a white hero saving the day. You know, we had many, many of John Wayne type of movie where he arrives and he will fight all the bad guys and fix the problem. We don't need that. We need to see the true story of these people. And that's what pushed me also to do this movie. Sorry for the long answer.
As you're describing what happened after 9/11 and how horrific it was for the United States, the trauma, an attack on our soil, the greatest loss of life since on our soil by at the hands of someone outside of the U.S. since the War of 1812, there were all kinds of things and reasons to be upset about it. However, in that process, we invaded a country that had nothing to do with 9/11. And also, when bin Laden was found, he was found in Pakistan, not Afghanistan. And the U.S. never got real proof that he was in Afghanistan from the Afghani government. And they were pretty forthright about it, knowing what they were facing. So there's that. Plus, on top of that, the U.S., through the work of the Bush administration and John Yoo, created a separate system of judicial law in order to make wrote a memo essentially sanctioning an extra judicial system that had never existed in American history for all of this to happen. These are things that everyone should be held to account for that had anything to do with this. So I just wanted to kind of throw in a little bit of the extra spice on top of all of this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a, you know, we are highly supported by the wonderful woman who was UN rapporteur for human rights and counterterrorism, Fionnuala Aulin, who wrote this great report on Guantanamo. She's the only UN person authorized to go to Guantanamo, as she said, because she pushed on the government every single month and never relents. So at the end of the day, they say, okay, fine, go and leave us alone. So she went and wrote this damning report about what was going on there. And she has a very great line. She says, you don't get to decide who gets human rights and who does not.
Yeah.
That's part of the law. That's part of every convention the U.S. signed, et cetera, et cetera. That's not up to debate. Everybody is entitled to minimum of protection.
Right.
And of course, she's absolutely right on that. And that's what the Bush administration decided to forget. She has also a very interesting point of view that I think we should say is that she feels she did that for 6 years. Her last mission was to go in Syria to inquire about the people held in prison there. And she says that the 6 years of doing this work brought her a major question, the efficiency of the legal fight. Because she says, we fought many battles, we won many battles legally. Did it change anything? No. We can win as many battles as we want against every government. Do the government change their policy? No. It's still the same. So she thinks that at that point, we have to bring, and it's why she's supporting the film, you know, she thinks that we have to bring the debate on an emotional level.
Yeah.
We have to make people understand what it is. And it's why, as you saw in the movie, I shot a lot of scenes from the point of view of the guy who is kidnapped and tortured. Like when he's in the black hood, the camera is in the black hood. When he's put in a box for a mock execution, the camera is in the box, et cetera, et cetera. And because I wanted, you know, the audience to start to think, well, how would I feel if one morning policemen come knock at my door and say, come with us? And I'm asked this stupid question that I don't even have any idea what they are talking about. And because I can't answer this stupid question, I'm tortured. How would I feel about that? And that's the whole goal for me of the movie, is to get people to understand that it's not just technical, practical issues, it's human issues, you know, which involve human beings, you know.
Well, thank you for bringing us back to what we're here to talk about. By the way, I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Philippe Diaz. He is the director of this narrative film called I Am Gitmo, about Guantanamo and the people who were brought there for quote-unquote justice and the ramifications of one particular story and how it all plays out. And also to another point you just made, and that is there is, in fact, a representation of these different points of view in the film, which to its credit, it is told from multiple, mostly Gamal Zadig, who is the man who was brought in from right out of his home and brought to Guantanamo for reasons he never, ever really quite, well, he understood on some level, but was never, was a random act by probably someone who lived in his neighborhood to bring him there by what we were talking about, by a bounty. We have the interrogator, John Anderson, and we also have the attorney who comes in on behalf of Gamal to help argue his case. And all of those have their multidimensional characters who are brought in there to essentially pose to us, the audience. These are the dynamics in place. I thought you did a very effective job with that.
What was important for me is to, you know, I didn't want to have a bad guy in this story. It's not even the interrogator. First of all, is someone who doubts a lot. And I'm glad I had Eric Pierpoint, as you mentioned, because he's a wonderful actor who knows how to doubt on screen. The thing is that it's not that these people were all bad and wanted to torture Middle Eastern men. It's that they were told over and over and over again that they were dealing with the worst of the worst terrorists, and that the worst of the worst terrorists were preparing 10 more 9/11. Yeah. So, of course, when you are given this reality, it's changed a little bit the perspective. I needed this interrogator to start to doubt when he's in front of Gamal and think, well, it doesn't look like that at all. I don't have any proof of his guilt. All the proof that I'm given were fabricated, because that was also what the government was doing at the time, fabricating, you know, fake proof of their guilt, putting, for example, their picture on top of another body next to Bin Laden, and these kind of crazy things, you know. And so, of course, I needed someone to doubt. And it's why I created the character of John Anderson, based on a lot of things I read also from Interrogator and all that, because it's not that they were all bad guy and, you know, and didn't care. You know, specifically the military, because the military is raised in every book, in every manual, in every teaching lesson. They learn that you do not torture people. That's right. On a very strict basis. And even some agency, you know, for example, the FBI, wrote damning report on the use of torture in Guantanamo. It's not that it's all, but again, we are talking about this major propaganda of all these men are bad and we have to treat them as such. It's why I put a little clip of Dick Cheney in an interrogation saying, oh yeah, we'll have to use very bad people and very bad methods to get these men to talk, because we are dealing with very bad men. It's like, okay, so suddenly, if you want, after 9/11, the United States were not abiding by any kind of rules, any kind of law. Right. They could not care less about the international convention they signed. They could not care less about human rights. They could not care less about anything. And that, of course, is the door open to anything, because, you know, it means that next time that someone is captured in any country in the world, the government will say, look what they did. So why would we care about doing any different?
You were mentioning earlier that you founded Cinema Libre, and I want to know, let people know, before we get too far along here, how they can see I Am Gitmo. Where will it be available?
And we'll open here in Los Angeles at the Lamley Monica, and we'll have Fionnuala, the UN reporter is flying to be with us and do also Q&A and discussion in Los Angeles. So after that, if other theaters want it, we'll be happy to give it to them and continue for maybe a month or two. And after that, we will put it, we created our own streaming platform because we were tired to have our movie censored, you know, by Amazon or the like, or to receive cents when someone buys a movie to see on Amazon Prime or on Tubi or whatever, we receive cents. So which means that the filmmaker receives cents. So we were so tired of that we decided to create our own streaming platform, which is called CLS Now, CLS for Cinema Libre Studio, clsnow.tv. And that we will launch on May 2nd, and we will have Guantanamo on it right away after this short theatrical release for people to see either free or subscription or pay-per-view, whatever, you know, so we'll have that, because at least we'll know that the movie won't be censored and we'll get dollars rather than cents.
So, for anyone who wants to know just what you're describing, you can go to cinemalibre.com.
Studio. Yeah, cinemalibrestudio.com. So that's the main company. And clsnow.tv is the streaming platform that will be launched on May 2nd.
Great. And I'll also post it to filmschoolradio.com, all that information as well, how to get Libre.
There is also the iamgitmo.com, which is the site of the film itself. Oh.
Well, congratulations on I Am Gitmo, and look forward to more. Over the years, I have had many a filmmaker from your distribution on the program, and it's always a pleasure because these are always films of substance and whatever it be about. So my congratulations to you on your pursuit of cinema matters, and also for this particular film, I Am Gitmo, based on true events. Be producer, director, and writer of I Am Gitmo, and that would be Philippe Diaz. Philippe, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your help.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.